Astonishing Legends Network.
Disclaimer. This episode includes the usual amount of adult language and graphic discussions you've come to expect around here. But in the event it becomes an unusual amount, expect another call from me.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Scared All the Time. I'm Chris Kalari.
And I'm Ed Vicola.
And this week we are diving into a topic that's going to turn your world upside down. That's right, this is our second episode celebrating the release of the last season of Stranger Things, and if you think the fictional Hawkins Lab opening a gate to another dimension is spooky, wait until you hear about the real-life science center that some people think is doing exactly that. Today, we are separating fact from fictions, muons from gluons, neutrons from neutrinos, and maybe tearing a few holes in reality as we explore the wild world of CERN and the Large Hadron Collider. From the hardcore physics of the God particle to the hardcore conspiracies about gateways to hell, time travelers, and the Mandela effect, we are going to be taking you on a ride through all kinds of apocalyptic shenanigans. So buckle up, because this is one concerning fear that you won't want to miss.
What are we
scared?
When are we
all the time?
Join us.
Now it is time for
Scared All the Time.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. We've got some news that you'll be thankful for, and that is that we are not going to read a whole bunch of five-star reviews in this housekeeping. We are just going to say...
We have them, just so people
we
know.
We have them. But we've done a bunch lately, so we just want to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We hope you enjoy this episode. If you are enjoying it with your family or enjoying it while you're hiding from your family, either way, we hope you enjoy it. We are very thankful that you are listening to the show and that hopefully some of you have been for a couple of...
You've listened to more than one episode, we're giving you a five-star review.
That's true. We are. It's been quite a ride. The show has brought so much good stuff into our life, and we hope that we are putting out as much good stuff as we are getting from it, and it's just been really great to build this whole community with you guys. So we will be thankful for that as we chow into turkey or some sort of vegan meat if you are not a meat eater, or maybe you just stick to sweet potatoes.
Some people ham. There are ham people out there.
Some people ham. Yeah. I mean, it is weird. Ed, I think you had more traditional Thanksgivings than I did. My Nona always cooked Thanksgiving, and it was always just like pasta. Like, there was never really any turkey or anything.
Yes, I had a traditional, more traditional Thanksgiving normally. Gravy boats, stuff like that.
Absolutely. Well, wherever you are, whoever you are, we hope you enjoy this episode, and we will see you after Thanksgiving in the space between Turkey Day and Tree Day, and we've got a couple more good episodes for you lined up before the end of the year, so stay tuned.
And come hang out with us. Come hang out on the Facebook group, on the Discord chat. All the links are on all the places. Get involved. You know what I mean? Get involved. Come say hi. Make this, you know, we love, we're thankful for all the people we get to share this show with, but it's also equally exciting to have you guys share stuff with us, you know? Shoot us an email, we'll read at some point. Or come on the Discord and we'll see it immediately. Or hit us up on Instagram or tag us and stuff.
Or join the Patreon so you can come to our monthly live shows, one of which will be coming up in the next couple of days.
Next 6 days, probably. Don't want to make a liar out of us.
All right, guys, we love you. We'll see you soon. Enjoy CERN portals. All right, Ed, I realize this is perhaps a big question to start the show with, but let's give it a shot. Do you ever wonder if we're still living in the same reality that we were born into?
I don't know what your what exactly that question means.
Okay,
is there anything more you can?
Let's try this. When I say Large Hadron Collider, what do you think of?
I think of that thing in Europe or Scandinavia or something.
Okay. Do you know what it is? Can you tell me anything about the Large Hadron Collider or CERN?
I remember CERN as a... I remember like a couple years ago, the first time I had heard of... And I don't know if CERN is the town, is an acronym, is the machine. I don't know. But CERN, the last time I had heard of it, it was like... We were going to try and find the God particle or split an atom or do something. And I thought, like, there was, like, a bunch of, like, Y2K-esque news that was, like, when they hit you know, the start button on this machine. Is the world gonna end? And then I never heard about it again, and the world didn't end. And so I guess it was fine, and I've never thought of it since.
All right. Well, we're off to a really informative start, just as I'd planned.
oh, no. Is this not, was none of that real? Is none of that true?
No. Obviously, you are not a particle physicist or a string theory mathematician, and neither am I. But I since we like to start our episodes with a personal connection to the fear of the week, maybe let me try asking it this way. Has there ever been a time that something happened to you that made you think something in your reality has shifted?
Yeah, I made money once. I made like really good money on like one gig. And okay. It only happened once. Maybe that was the day they hit the button.
Right. We got to go back and check the calendar to see if Ed's financial independence was achieved on the day that CERN booted up the Large Hadron Collider. It might have been. The timeline might line up. You know, I've had a couple of encounters with phenomena like that. Some of it is a little bit Mandela effect-y, which we will get into later in this episode. The only time I've had something happen that felt like reality maybe kind of shifted is a couple years ago, I went through a period where I could have sworn that I had two cats when I moved to LA. In reality, I only had one cat. There was this little scruffy cat that hopped out of a bush and followed my girlfriend back to our place. And we named her Ripley, and she was lovely, but she was sick. So she passed pretty soon after we adopted her. But years later, I'm talking like, this is maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, I started having waves of like dreams and memories of a second cat that I had around the same time who ran away. And I don't remember the cat's name, and I don't even really remember what it looked like, but I just had this like gnawing sensation that I had lived with two cats. And those memories came and went. And I don't have them anymore. I don't know where they came from or why, but I did have the feeling that like something was a little off with the universe. It was bizarre. My best guess is that I had a couple of very realistic dreams that kind of got like misfiled as memories, maybe.
Okay.
But it was weird. It was
I'm
weird.
A little under the weather right now, and I slept for like 14 hours yesterday.
Okay.
I had crazy dreams, and I wonder if any of those, they were mundane, boring, life-like dreams, and I wonder how many of those will be on an episode in a year, being like, I swear to God, I had five roommates, or whatever, but they made it just sick dreams, fever dreams.
Yeah, literally, I think you are probably having actual fever dreams, although it's very funny that your usually I think a fever dream describes something kind of crazy and wild. It sounds like your fever dreams are more like I mowed the lawn today.
Oh God, to be able to mow your lawn would mean you own the property. So that's not happening. That is a fever dream. That would be crazy.
That would be crazy. Someday, man, someday. According to some researchers, it's possible, if not likely, that those memories that were that I had of these cats and maybe your dreams and memories of owning property are coming from a real place, another dimension that we passed through and carried with, to some extent, with us throughout time. Time gets a little tricky when discussing these ideas. There's a lot of past, present, and future kind of all layered on top of itself kind of talk.
Yeah, but you know what? We're 10 years into the Marvel Universe. It shouldn't be that hard to, like, maybe prior to everything being multiverse, it was difficult to try and explain these ideas. Now I think you can just be like, you know, in Endgame when this happened or whatever? You're like, okay, yeah, I get it.
Well, if Marvel hasn't helped you wrap your head around these concepts already, in this dimension, we're going to do that right now. At least I hope now is now in our dimension, because the first part of the last season of Stranger Things just dropped as you're listening to this, and there are elements of that show that are very much inspired by what is going down halfway across the world at CERN.
Yeah, where is that exactly?
I think we're going to get to that in one second.
Okay, I obviously didn't know when you asked.
I think a lot of listeners of this show in particular probably have at least a loose grasp, an Ed-style grasp, we'll call it, on what exactly we're talking about.
Oh, headline-based?
A headline-based grasp, because CERN or the Large Hadron Collider pops up in the news whenever scientists discover something mind-blowing or when the internet decides they're ripping open holes in reality again. But what exactly is CERN, and why do they have a giant underground ring that some say might unlock the gates of hell? Great question. So CERN stands for a bunch of French words that I'm going to try to pronounce here as...
Oh my God, we before you announce it to the world, the first time anyone's ever going to hear these, I...
Buckle up, folks.
We did a new Fear Unlocked recently where, like, had a ton of acronyms that were all in English, but it was a French company. So it's wild that they're actually doing acronyms in their native language.
They are. This acronym stands for Conseil Européen pour la Recherche Nucléaire.
Well, I mean, Europe, that's not just France.
Well, no, but those words are in French.
I don't like that. I don't know where
those words are French for European Council for Nuclear Research. So I guess ECNR, it wasn't as catchy as CERN. So we went with CERN. We're using the French. But CERN was founded way back in 1954 near Geneva, Switzerland.
Hey, question for you.
Yes.
Before I want to derail this early.
Yes, let's go.
Are these the same people? I doubt it. But like that found out that Chernobyl happened? Before the Soviet Union said anything, remember? Because it was like Swedish scientists or whomever like
measured like particles.
Yeah, they were like, this shouldn't be the case, and they were like, oh, it's coming from the wind or whatever, and so they learned about it first.
It's possible. I bet those people were probably connected in some way to CERN. My avenues of research for this episode were very much in a different direction. So
sure,
I didn't come across anything about Chernobyl, but yeah, that's certainly possible. I mean, CERN was founded by 12 different countries as a collaborative hub for cutting edge physics research. According to CERN's own history, quote, at the end of the Second World War, European science was no longer world class. Following the example of international organizations, a handful of visionary scientists imagined creating a European atomic physics laboratory. Such a laboratory would not only unite European scientists, but also allow them to share the increasing costs of nuclear physics facilities. So basically, Europe said, hey, let's all team up and do a lot of crazy science. And this, they also did it partially to lure back physicists who had fled to the U.S. during World War II.
I mean, fled is interesting that we were awarded.
Well, like, I think some physicists probably fled. I would say certainly, you know, Jewish
anyone part
physicists.
Of the anyone part of the atomic project came before.
And then
Project Paperclip.
Operation Paperclip brought over a bunch of other scientists from a little country called Germany. Who may have been involved in some of the reasons that the other physicists were fleeing, but that's probably another story for another time.
Gotcha.
In the early 50s, they chose Geneva as the location of their physical lab and Copenhagen as the headquarters for their theoretical research.
I just watched a video on Copenhagen. It looks like a really pretty dope town.
What kind of video was it?
It was just one of those, like, I watch a lot of, like, YouTubers on the move type videos. Mm-hmm. Those, like, travel YouTubers.
YouTubers on the march.
Yeah. And they, I don't know, they were doing, some guy I follow was, like, in Copenhagen. And it was like, this place looks cool. This place looks like a fun little town. Not
a
fun,
lot.
Like, I'm having a great time. But, like, everyone seems real happy here. Everyone seems real happy here.
Okay. So, okay, a happy town, if not a fun town. According to Britannica.com, the official CERN site now covers more than 250 acres in Switzerland and more than 1,125 acres in France. CERN now has 22 member states, up from 12, plus many collaborators worldwide, and hosts thousands of scientists from around the globe. Its mission is one of pure scientific discovery. Article 2 of CERN's founding charter even emphasizes that CERN's work is for the advancement of knowledge and not for military use. So
finally, in Article 2, we can get behind.
At least on paper, they are not interested in building secret superweapons, just public super colliders.
Until they need funding, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess one thing I'll preface this with is I'm mostly of the opinion that a lot, if not everything, that's going on at CERN is above board. But in terms of like an insular group of people who probably could control the stories coming out of their lab, You can't get much more insular than this.
Oh yeah, you haven't looked at the Bohemian Grove nuclear facility?
Well, them too.
All the great work they're doing in the Redwoods.
My point is, you'll just hear a lot of the counterpoints to the conspiracy theories in this episode are CERN going, well, that's simply not true. So
no evidence.
There's no evidence that it is true or that it's not true. I would generally say that proving the negative is almost impossible. So if you want to prove that CERN is up to no good, you have to bring the evidence. But
sure.
Just to put that out there, you're going to hear that a lot, that they're not doing X. They swear. So anyway, on the front of super colliders, they've been hugely successful. They've made Nobel Prize winning discoveries and technological breakthroughs, including inventing something we all use every day, the internet.
Okay, well, they're to blame.
CERN is, if you want to talk about a reality destroying invention,
yeah, for real.
You could blame Tim Berners-Lee, a British scientist who invented the World Wide Web while working at CERN in 1989. His new method of communication was originally conceived and developed to meet the demand for information sharing between scientists at universities and institutes all around the world. This is really fun and interesting, and I kind of recommend you do this just because, I don't know, it's a little cool thing that you can do today. The first website at CERN and in the entire world was dedicated to the project of the World Wide Web itself and was hosted on Tim Berners-Lee's Next, N-E-X-T, his Apple Next computer.
Okay.
What's really cool, and I recommend that you do just for the fun of doing it, is you can still visit the first website in the world today at info.cern.ch or by following the link in our show notes. It's the least impressive website on the internet next to the Scared All the Time webpage.
It's true.
But it's cool. It's cool. Not as cool as the Scared All the Time webpage. But what CERN is most famous for, though, is not inventing the internet. It's famous for its particle accelerator, the Large Hadron Collider, or what we will probably keep calling the LHC throughout this episode. According to the International Atomic Energy Association, particle accelerators produce and accelerate beams of charged particles such as electrons, protons, and ions of atomic and subatomic size. They are used not only in fundamental research for an improved understanding of matter, but also in a plethora of socioeconomic applications related to health, environmental monitoring, maybe that's how they detected Chernobyl, food quality, energy, and aerospace technologies, among others. Now, we're going to get a little physics heavy here, but we are both idiots, so I will try to explain it at the level that I understand it. There are two main types of particle accelerators, linear and circular. Both are used for the same reason, to fire off streams of particles at ridiculously high speeds. CERN is primarily in the business of circular accelerators, turning on their first, a 600 mega electron volt synchrocyclotron in 1957. The words from here on out are going to get real Back to the Future-y. So, experiments run with this machine enabled physicists to observe the decay of a pi meson, or pion, into an electron and a neutrino, which was apparently instrumental in the development of the theory of the weak force, which I don't remember exactly what it does, but I do remember learning about weak forces in high school physics.
I certainly didn't.
It's one of the ways that like atoms hold themselves together. I'm sure many of our listeners are screaming at the podcast right now going, God damn it, it's the this, that, the other thing. I'm sorry. Yeah. The CERN lab grew steadily from there, activating the particle accelerator known as the proton synchrotron in 1959 and the super proton synchrotron in 1976, which featured a nearly 4.5 mile circumference ring able to accelerate protons.
Sorry, physically?
What do you mean?
Like a physical 4.5 miles, like a giant circle?
Yes.
Holy shit.
Yes.
That's got to be on its side, right? It's not. That's
yeah,
not
no,
like a
that's
giant,
not up. It, it's
like
not
Ferris wheel.
No, okay. No. It's on its side.
Is that like Apple's offices?
Yeah, yeah. They've put their offices in a particle accelerator just to be prepared for the future.
Absolutely.
The Super Proton Synchrotron featured this 4.5 mile circumference ring and was able to accelerate protons to a peak energy of 500 GeV. Gigavolts, maybe?
Good enough volts.
Good enough volts. But all of these machines that they developed and ran at CERN pale in comparison to the Large Hadron Collider. Because, Ed, if you thought a 4.5 mile circumference ring was a big old ring.
Yeah, obviously I did.
The Large Hadron Collider is a 17 mile in circumference ring buried about 100 meters beneath the French-Swiss border.
Oh my gosh.
That is what? Three, four times as large as the Super Proton Synchrotron.
And I also can't picture it at all. I don't know if it's a little garden hose. I don't know if it's a giant, you know, two-story wall ring. You know what I mean? Like, I have no idea. I can't. All I know is we need to throw it into fucking Mordor.
It is huge. Here, let me pull up a picture of it for you.
Well, it's not Mordor. Mordor, I think, is where, like, that Mount Dune or whatever the fuck it's called is. But either way, you get the reference.
Yeah, you're pulling out rings, just general ring ideas.
Yeah. to get us through this episode, man.
Here is an image of inside the super collider. I'm putting it in the chat. I mean, it looks like something out of Half-Life, basically.
Okay, well, I'm opening it up here. Wow, okay, this is insane. I don't know if this is under a microscope's view inside of a computer, or if this is like a picture in a building.
That's a picture in a building. If you open that third one that I sent you, that gives you a better, it's the same area, but a different angle that gives you a better.
Oh, wow, yeah. So that's got to be it's 5 stories tall, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you measure stories underground, but yes.
I'm just doing it from the platforms with human beings standing on them. So the platforms look to be at least 8-9 feet tall each. So I think most, you know, a lot of places have 8-foot ceilings, 9-foot ceilings. So yeah, I'm going to go 4 to 6 stories tall. And it just looks like if you had a wire, like a Ethernet cable, like a round cable, extension cord, what if they just... You know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids reversed that and made the Ethernet cable a million times bigger.
Well, then that would be from the film Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Yeah. So I blew up to the kids a giant wire, essentially, and then wrapped it 17 miles around.
It looks like a coax cable is what it looks like.
It does. In this picture that we're looking at here, where it has that little fucking pluggy boy here, the male end of the connection.
So if you're just listening to this in your car and happen to know what a coax cable is, bingo.
You also are unemployed. So also I should point out that it has a distinctly male and female ends in both these pictures. Where, like, it looks as though they do close these onto one another.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't really know anything about how exactly this was constructed. I didn't really do any research on that. I'm sure it was an incredibly complicated engineering process.
I can't even imagine. 17 miles. This looks like when you're looking at the space shuttle or fucking a rocket, like, without the sheathing on. It's just, like, a zillion moving parts.
Yeah.
I don't even know. If something goes wrong, how do you even find... In 17 Here's, miles yeah. Of like little tiny diodes.
If you want to see what this looks like from the air, if you could see it, Ed, this link that I just sent you shows a couple different things. It shows the original. It's really an image of where they want to build a future collider that is like 100
kilometers
miles.
Big.
Yeah.
So holy shit, I'm looking at it here. And so do you have to bore out the ground like you do with making a subway?
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you... I assume they've probably pulled some subway technology.
I guess what I would like to know is, and maybe we'll learn it in a little bit, for people who can't see... I mean, this is all on video now, amazingly, our show. But for people who can't see, it's a map, like a satellite map from the sky with like several rings kind of superimposed over it, showing, I believe, like the original one, then the super one, then the like current 27 kilometers one, and then just a absolutely massive ring going underneath like towns and lakes and mountains. That would be their proposed future site. And I'm for it. You know what I'm saying? I'm for whatever this is. Build as many rings as you want. But I would like to know, why do we need a bigger one? Like, what are we getting from the smaller ones, which I'm hoping you're about to tell us, that would say, man, we've gotten X, Y, and Z. Just imagine how many things beyond Z if we had a bigger one.
That's a good question. I was going to bring up the same point, because I think before I can answer that question, what I should put out there for the listener is that this is the world's most powerful particle accelerator, and its job, despite how massive it is, the job of this machine is to take subatomic particles, usually protons, which are the positively charged bit inside the atom, and whip them around this underground racetrack at 99.99999% the speed of light. So if you're getting that close to the speed of light, the only thing that I can think you could use a bigger one for would be to get even more nines at the end of that number closer to the speed of light.
Yeah, I guess, because if you're doing it at a small, like the smaller you're doing it, it must create more heat and energy and friction, where I imagine like doing the exact same speeds at a larger surface area might mean we can have it on longer without everything just lighting on fire. Like, I don't yeah. exactly know, but that's the only thing I can think of why you'd want to like maybe dissipate over a greater distance. Because it's yeah. not like, it's still going to be 99.9999%. It's not like, hey, we raced this particle around Charlotte Motor Speedway and then it broke the track record there. But like, can it break the track record at Daytona? Because it's yeah. a different size. Like, I think it's always going to be the same speed. So
I would think, but that's what I'm saying. I don't know. Maybe you can get, maybe that 0.999 can keep getting closer and closer and closer to the actual speed of light if you have more.
I don't think anything can go the speed of light, right? Otherwise, it would just be transporting.
No, nothing. Like, but you can get maybe closer to it than what they're at now.
But I guess
maybe.
My initial question, which it sounds like you won't be able to answer, and
almost
I'll never look up.
Not.
Yeah, and I'll never look up. So maybe someone can email us, is, you know, what is the definitive, you know, result that they got on the small one that made them want to go bigger? And then, you know, what do they feel like they couldn't get with the smaller ring? Like, what
bragging
is the
rights.
Goal? I guess just bragging rights, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, is like, what's the goal of these? And the only time I've ever heard of it was the, you know, headline that was like, we don't know the goal, but the side effect is the world explodes.
Well, here's the goal. The goal is to make protons go very, very fast, which you do through supercooled superconducting magnets that are chilled to negative 271 degrees Celsius, which is colder than deep space, okay. to make them ultra efficient. And those magnets steer and focus two beams of protons going in opposite directions around the ring. And then the fun part is you make those beams slam into each other head on. And when those protons collide,
it's
again,
crossfire. They've made crossfire.
They've made a very
made
large
the board
game
crossfire.
When those protons collide at nearly light speed, they shatter into a spray of fundamental particles that recreate conditions that haven't existed since moments after the Big Bang.
Okay.
Then there's these huge detectors, which, as far as I could tell, are basically like giant high-speed cameras and then a bunch of other kind of sensor arrays that are stationed around the collision points to capture evidence of every teeny tiny bit of subatomic debris that flies out of that collision. And that data is then sent off to thousands of scientists who sift through it to find evidence of new particles and phenomenon that we have yet to understand. Someone once described it as, quote, sort of like looking for needles in a haystack if the haystack was made of explosions.
Oh. So I mean, it's kind of like, that's kind of how I feel with like everything I write or develop, where it's like, you gotta ask a lot of questions for me, but once we get a room together, this will all be figured out. And
yeah.
The same thing with these guys. Like, look, I built a machine. I took the pictures. Now I'm just going to send it to 22 countries to be like, hey, man, I look like an idiot if there's nothing that came yeah, out of this.
The
like,
what fuck
can you,
is any of
yeah,
this?
Yeah, what can you see?
Ed and I know a thing or two about being scared, and we can tell you from personal experience that one of the scariest things we've ever done is starting our own small business. For 2 years now, Scared All the Time has forced us to face the unknown, tackle big problems head on, and learn everything as we go.
From generating email and social media campaigns to creating an online store to managing merch sales and more, the to-do list is never ending. The amount of decisions to be made and materials to be created can quickly overwhelm your entire life. Finding the right tool that not only helps you out, but simplifies everything can be a game changer.
And we're here to tell you we found it. For us and millions of businesses around the world, that tool is Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. From household names like Mattel and Gymshark to brands just getting started like yours truly, Scared All the Time.
I want to be in a situation where I can wear Gymshark. but until then, Shopify puts a professional design studio in your hands. With hundreds of ready-to-use templates, they can help you build a beautiful online store to match your brand style.
And it's packed with helpful AI tools that accelerate your content creation. Write product descriptions, page headlines, even enhance your product photography, all with the power of Shopify.
Plus, Shopify can help you get the word out like you have a marketing team behind you. They make it easy to create email and social media campaigns wherever your customers are scrolling and strolling.
And best yet, Shopify is your commerce expert with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and more. If you're ready to sell something, you're ready for Shopify.
Turn your big business idea into... with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/scared.
Go to shopify.com/scared. Again, that's shopify.com/scared. So that's the point. The point is to search for usually evidence of particles that we have knowledge of through the math, but have never necessarily seen physical evidence of. And they are also keeping an eye out again for just like phenomenon in that debris that we don't even know, the unknown unknowns, the things we don't even know to look for.
Exactly. I do wonder, I do have a question and I don't know, and it's something I can look up, but I don't want to click on it. Mm-hmm. Is I would like to know how far away Copenhagen is from Geneva. And I would also like to know on paper if that's in the blast radius if something goes wrong, where it is just like the theoretical physics guys has requested to be outside of the explosion rate in case they're theoretically wrong.
I think if they were that worried, they would be a lot further than just like kind of far enough away.
We saw Oppenheimer that weekend. And so yeah. Everyone knows that, like, you're telling me this can blow up the atmosphere?
So the Large Hadron Collider was first switched on in September 2008, and it almost immediately started a bunch of rumors, but also breaking records.
In what
by
year?
2008.
I hate that I remember it. I remember that news. That was a lot longer ago than I thought.
I know. When I was digging back through this, I was like, holy shit. I feel like it happened a lot sooner. But there's a reason that we kind of... I'm about to get to why it might register for you is that it happened a little more recently. 2011, it was routinely smashing protons together at energies that had never before been achieved in a lab. But the big prize came in 2012 when CERN announced the discovery of the Higgs boson particle.
Oh, 2012. It's the year the end was supposed to. The end of the Earth was supposed to happen.
Yes, we're going to get to that in a minute. This particle... baby. Often nicknamed the God particle, was the last missing piece of the standard model of physics, which is the theory that explains everything that we think we know about how the universe and particles and forces work. And the Higgs is the particle that explains why other particles have mass. I don't understand how that works, but the Higgs is the particle.
It's not up to us to understand that.
I know, it's up to the thousands of guys that were like, I don't know. Scientists had been hunting for the Higgs boson for almost 50 years, and this was absolutely like for our understanding of physics to work, this particle had to exist, but no one could ever see it for a variety of unexpected and often inexplicable reasons. In fact, and this I found really interesting, the name God particle sounds really fancy and scary and intimidating until you learn that it actually came from a 1993 book that the author jokingly wanted to call the Goddamn particle because it was so hard to find. Huh. But the publisher wouldn't let him, so they just called it the God particle, which is, I mean, a much better name. Yeah,
sure.
It's a better name for a book.
Yeah.
But it was so hard to find that the search almost feels cursed. In 1993, the multi-billion dollar United States Superconducting Super Collider was originally designed to search for the Higgs, but was canceled by Congress abruptly. And then in 2000, scientists at a previous CERN accelerator called the LEP were on the verge of discovering the particle when funding again dried up. And then when the Large Hadron Collider was built and ready to go, it was originally scheduled to start operating in 2006, 2 years before it was actually turned on, but it was hit with a series of delays and setbacks, including a sudden explosion between two magnets, and get this, the arrest of one of its contributing physicists on suspicion of terrorist activity.
No, this is... I am wrapping tinfoil around my head. I wish we didn't have a video component to see that I'm not. But everything you're telling me, I'm like, whatever they're looking for is real. It's going to change the world. Congress knew it. They had to stop it. This other thing knew it. Europe knew it. Like, they won't let you just do the last bit because it's going to destroy the world or open a portal to another fucking dimension. So I can see that maybe it will. Let's see how, let's see where the story goes. Tell me more.
Well, the story of the terrorists, I actually dug a little deeper on because I was like, what the fuck is this about? Apparently, this physicist, and again, there's thousands and thousands of physicists employed by CERN, so the fact that you'd have a couple of bad apples in the bunch isn't super surprising, but this guy was actually in contact with a North African branch of Al-Qaeda, and the spokesman for CERN at the time said that the scientist's security card, quote, didn't give him access to any of the underground facilities, and that while an attack on the collider itself would have provided massive publicity for a terrorist group, the facility itself contains no weapons material. The spokesperson said there's nothing in there that people can steal and use for terrorist ends. Nothing at all. It's all about personal safety. There are areas where we have cryogenic liquids, high magnetic fields, particle beams, and so on, where you need specialist knowledge to be able to go there. So again, CERN aggressively refuting the idea that there was any danger in this and everything's fine.
There's also that thing of, well, also it's probably true because I think about, I read this really good book a couple years ago or like 2 years ago called Chip War, about like semiconductors and that, you know, Taiwanese fab that makes all of the impressive semiconductors, like no one else in the world can do it.
Yeah.
And it's about the whole history of like them being made and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, like there was some hack or something a couple years ago that was like, oh, they got a bunch of cutting edge information about how these machines work and like all this secret stuff for NVIDIA chips and what have you. And it was like, okay, cool. No one can do this. Like, it's enjoy it. Like, you can come in here, you can storm the shores, shoot everyone in this building, and still not know how to do anything here.
Right. And I kind of feel like that's one button that you just hit, like, make more chips.
Yeah. And so it's like, that's how I feel about like the CERN thing where it's like, oh, we got all these CERN schematics and I'm going to go in here and take this. It's like, buddy, this is just science happening.
Yeah.
Here.
It's not like, it's not like Al-Qaeda was going to like tunnel in there and like redirect the laser beam towards a city or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, it must run on nuclear plutonium. If we can just get our hands on that, we can build a warhead. It's like, nah, man, this is essentially a Hot Wheels track that we just keep smashing Hot Wheels into each other.
Yeah. So the weirdest theory of all, though, is that some people think that CERN was nearly derailed by a time traveler just shortly after it opened in 2009.
Sure.
According to Time magazine, of all places.
Wow. Wow, I'm looking at that with a totally different light now.
Quote, sometime on November 3rd, 2009, the supercooled magnets in Sector 81 of the Large Hadron Collider outside Geneva began to dangerously overheat. Scientists rushed to diagnose the problem since the particle accelerator has to maintain a temperature colder than deep space in order to work. The culprit, quote, a bit of baguette, says Mike Lamont of the control center of CERN, which built and maintains the LHC. Apparently, a passing bird may have dropped the chunk of bread on an electrical substation above the accelerator, causing a power cut. The baguette was removed, power to the cryogenic system was restored, and within a few days, the magnets returned to their super cool temperatures.
And the guy who they fired for installing bread sensors, he was promptly rehired and apologized to.
But they did, unfortunately, permanently fire Pigeon Larry, who spent every morning feeding pigeons chunks of bread outside the LHC.
Well, or he's the guy who's like 7 miles around. No, I'm going to get a bird to deliver this message.
While most scientists would write off this event as a freak accident, two esteemed physicists formulated a theory that suggests an alternative explanation. Perhaps a time-traveling bird was sent from the future to sabotage the
experiment.
Is
the time traveler?
Hang on now.
Okay.
Bech Nielsen of the Niels Bohr Institute in Copenhagen and Masao Ninomiya of the Yukawa Institute for Theoretical Physics in Kyoto,
both birds in little lab coats,
published several papers arguing that the CERN experiment may be the latest in a series of physics research projects whose purposes are so unacceptable to the universe that they are doomed to fail, subverted by the future.
I love it. Well, time is obstinate, according to 11/22/63, my favorite book.
I think this is a little bit that. The quote here is, in a series of audacious papers, Nielsen and Ninomiya have suggested that setbacks to the LHC occur because of, quote, reverse chronological causation, which is to say sabotage from the future. Which, just call it sabotage from the future, man. That's a headline. The papers suggest that the Higgs boson may be abhorrent to nature, and the LHC's creation of the Higgs sometime in the future sends ripples backward through time to scupper its own creation. Each time scientists are on the verge of capturing the Higgs, the theory holds the future intercedes. The theory as to why the universe rejects the creation of Higgs bosons is based on complex mathematics, but Nielsen tells Time, quote, you could explain it simply by saying that God hates the Higgs and tries to avoid them.
Huh. I figured Higgs was like a person's name or something.
I know. God,
is Higgs not a person's name? I figured the Higgs boson was like Dave Higgs and Rebecca boson.
No, the theory of the Higgs boson was proposed by, the guy wasn't named Higgs.
But Higgs boson, those are like elements, or those are like particles or something?
They're particles that are the explanation for why other particles have mass.
Okay, so what I'm saying is like it's a thing. It's not a person or that's why God can hate the Higgs is like me saying I hate mold.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Got you.
Yes. The Higgs are not a person.
Are we going to get into any of the looking glass stuff in this?
If
you don't know what I'm talking about, then we'll discuss it on a different episode.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get into the looking glass stuff in this.
Okay.
Now, in 2025, we know it's not true that God hates Higgs. Because thanks to CERN, and I guess no thanks to God, we have confirmed the existence of the Higgs boson among many other particles. But whenever humans build something this powerful and complex, people are going to speculate. And the Large Hadron Collider, with its high energy experiments, immediately attracted a ton of fears, urban legends, and doomsday predictions. A selection of questions curated from CERN's frequently asked questions page should give you a sense of the scope of people's concerns.
We also have to take into account this is potentially the fucking oldest frequently asked questions page on the internet.
Well,
so there might just be the sheer number of questions might find some wackos in there.
Yeah, these questions are newer than the oldest page on the internet.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure.
Gotcha.
But the questions include, there's a lot of them, but the ones that are pertinent here are, will CERN open a door to another dimension?
Okay.
What did Stephen Hawking say about Higgs potentially destroying the universe? Can the LHC have an influence on weather patterns and natural phenomena? Will CERN generate a black hole? I saw a video of a strange ritual at CERN. Is it real? And does the LHC trigger earthquakes?
Oh my God. I want to know about just the second to last one you said.
Well, so the second to last one is a whole weird rabbit hole that felt not akin to anything from Stranger Things, but there is a video which seems to be kind of tough to find now, but it is out there on the internet of what appears to be a bunch of people in black robes sacrificing a woman in front of a statue of Shiva in front of the CERN Large Hadron Collider building.
Wait, so in front of the Large Hadron Collider building is a statue of Shiva?
Yes.
Isn't Shiva the, like, who Oppenheimer's quoting, the, like, I have become whatever of death or something? Okay, it's actually Vishnu, but he hangs out a lot with the other guy. So those three gods all have to do with time as well, which is wild after my quick Wikipediaing. It definitely seems like a wink and a nod. It seems like if it's there, it's like an inside joke for physicists.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Shiva statue is an inside joke for physicists. Or is it Shiva?
Shiva? Who knows? Shiva seems more right, but...
Shiva. Well, there's sitting Shiva, which is...
That's Jewish, and when someone dies.
Right. So this is let's probably go with Shiva.
Let's go with Shiva, baby.
So, the statue of Shiva does exist outside of the Large Hadron Collider, and some people, every explanation was very vague from CERN, but just that some people got a little carried away and thought this would be a funny joke, and it's not a funny joke, and we're very sorry, and somebody has basically tried to take all of the evidence of this video off the internet. So,
okay.
You know, who knows? We'll dig into each of these as we go. Suffice to say that before the Large Hadron Collider was turned on, some people were worried that it might accidentally destroy the planet. According to an article I found from 2008, a lawsuit was even filed in Hawaii to try to stop it from running at all. Quote, Walter Wagner, a retired radiation safety officer who lives in Hawaii, and Luis Sancho, a science writer and professor in Barcelona, filed the lawsuit, claiming that the collider could produce a black hole that could eat the Earth or cause some other calamitous effect. Predictions of such outcomes have been refuted in safety studies. Mr. Wagner and Mr. Sancho sued CERN, the United States Department of Energy, the National Science Foundation, and the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory in federal district court in Hawaii. The Energy Department and the Science Foundation have contributed about $531 million for the collider's estimated cost of $8 billion. The judge in the case decided that the fraction paid by the U.S. was too small for the collider to constitute a major federal action as defined by the National Environmental Policy Act, so the court lacked jurisdiction to act on environmental grounds.
Fair. So, but also, it's weird a little bit to me that this ring is not in America.
Well,
like, with all the shit that we, I mean, obviously Congress got cold feet and they didn't, you know, pay that billion bones or whatever the hell you said earlier, but it just seems wild, like, with... You know, how many Stanford people worked on this over there? You know what I mean? So it's like...
We've tried to build our own, but, you know, the funding has never come through. So if we... I don't know if we do have any... I assume we must have some particle accelerators in the States, but they're not nearly as big. For the record, much like the concern that setting off a nuclear weapon would incinerate the atmosphere, physicists evaluated all the possibilities of disasters that could strike when we turn on the collider and were thoroughly unconcerned, mostly because nature has been running a much bigger collider in the sky called the sun for billions of years with no apocalyptic effects on our planet. Cosmic rays, which are high energy particles shooting from space, slam into Earth's atmosphere at far higher energies than are produced by the collider all the time, and our planet is still here. In fact, you are hit. Every square inch of your body is being hit by cosmic ray particles almost constantly, and you are fine. You are still here. You might get what's known as a sunburn if you are out in them for too long. But you're fine. So if that's the case, then my question becomes, what's all the talk about CERN creating a black hole that would swallow the planet? Because it's come up a few times, and I get that a black hole is generally a big, scary thing that swallows everything in its vicinity. So creating one on Earth sounds dangerous and bad, but I don't even really understand how we would create one.
Yeah, that's why we don't work there.
Well, according to Scientific American, it's complicated. They say, quote, a black hole typically forms when a star much more massive than our sun dies. While the outer layers of such a star explode outward in a supernova, its core crumples inward, pressing down towards its central point with so much power that no known force in the universe can stop it. This results in a subatomic spot of unimaginable mass and density whose gravity is so strong that even something traveling at the speed of light could not move fast enough to escape its clutches. These kinds of black holes, frighteningly, are common throughout the universe.
Which is why Scientific European called it not that complicated, because our populace learned about it in fourth grade.
Well, we know that you create a black hole by condensing the core of a star to a subatomic point, right? But that is very hard to do in an underground lab.
Yeah.
So real world black holes are only scary in the sense that if you get too close to one, you won't be able to escape. And we don't really know what happens as you get sucked down into one other than you would not survive it. But even if someone generated a black hole in a lab on Earth, the limits of our technology would prevent us from whipping up anything particularly dangerous. One theoretical astrophysicist at Princeton University says it would likely be so low mass that its gravitational influence would be relatively small and it wouldn't actually gobble up that much matter.
Sure, he might lose a couple of desks, clipboard goes.
Not even that, because this Elliot Quatert, the theoretical astrophysicist, says that only within a spherical boundary surrounding the black hole, known as the event horizon.
Oh, great movie.
Great movie. Only within the event horizon would a person or object get pulled inexorably inward. Now, this is where the size of the black hole matters, because enormous black holes, the one in outer space, have giant event horizons with diameters that can stretch for millions of kilometers. Smaller ones have more minute event horizons extending just tens of kilometers across. And if you could make a black hole in a lab, this person says, even if it weighed only half a kilogram, which I don't know how likely that even is, it would have an event horizon 1 trillion times smaller than a proton.
All right. So it's like, don't step right there.
drop yeah. a pin right here.
Yeah, yeah.
You're fine.
Yeah.
And that's a big if we could even create one, because in our four-dimensional universe, with 3 dimensions of space and 1 dimension of time, gravity is too weak to pound matter into a black hole. If other dimensions exist, though, gravity may not be as weak as it seems to us, because some of its force could be leaking into these other dimensions. In such a universe, a black hole appearing inside an atom smasher becomes much more feasible, potentially revealing insights into the very nature of gravity. According to Juan Maldacena, a theoretical physicist at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, if we had discovered a black hole in an atom smasher, it would have been among the most weird and surprising physics you could possibly see in the Large Hadron Collider. Despite all this science, it still doesn't stop some conspiracy theorists from muttering about catastrophic scenarios.
Let's go.
For example,
my people, let's hear from them.
For example, there was an interpretation of some comments made by Stephen Hawking that got people riled up. Stephen Hawking once noted that the Higgs field could theoretically become unstable and cause something called quantum vacuum collapse that would end the universe. So deep breath, what the fuck is that? What the fuck is a quantum vacuum collapse? Why are there so many big word ways for everything we know to be destroyed in like the blink of an eye? According to the website Big Think, in this unsettling scenario, a bubble pops into existence somewhere in the universe. Inside that bubble.
Hello. It's like the bubble can talk. It's so fun.
Inside the bubble, the laws of physics are wildly different than they are outside the bubble. This bubble would expand at the speed of light, eventually taking over the entire universe. Galaxies drift apart, atoms can't hold themselves together, and the ways the particles interact are fundamentally changed. Whatever form the universe takes after this event certainly wouldn't be hospitable for humans.
This is some great Gazoo shit. Remember that little like spaceman that would hang out in the Flintstones and just do
yes.
wacky shit?
Yes.
Seems like he would be like dropping bubbles. Or Mitzelplick, that like Superman villain.
Whose name, like you have to, no one can pronounce it or something, but if you say it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I mispronounced it, but I don't know. It has some sort of like Rumpelstiltskin rules attached. Yeah.
So the way that this bubble could theoretically be created is, as many things in this episode are, extremely complicated, but I'll do my best to explain. So basically, physicists think most of the quantum forces that hold the fabric of the universe together exist in a vacuum state, which just means they are stable. This is very good for us. We really don't want these forces to start changing the state that they're in. So vacuum state, thumbs up, good, stable.
Okay.
The one quantum field that we aren't entirely sure has reached its vacuum state, because it has just recently begun to be studied, is the Higgs field. The Higgs field could be operating in what's called a false vacuum, which means we just think that it's in a vacuum state, but really it still has a some ways to go before it reaches that.
Hey, Higgs, you in a vacuum state? Yes. I don't like the way you said that.
should some influx of energy ever jolt the Higgs field into a true vacuum state, quote, the physics that govern our universe would unravel. As the delicate balance between quantum particles breaks down, the Higgs field would break out of its false vacuum in a domino effect throughout the universe, and a bubble of vacuum decay would spread at the speed of light. As it passes through everything, matter, the forces of the universe would cease to function as it currently does. So there's really nothing that the Large Hadron Collider would necessarily do to push the Higgs field into a true vacuum state, again, assuming that it is in a false vacuum right now, which we don't know. But I think the conspiracy theory comes loosely from the fact that the Large Hadron Collider is studying the Higgs field, and people sort of understand the connection between the Higgs field and this quantum vacuum collapse. And so you smash things together at light speed, who knows? It sounds like you could certainly disrupt the fabric of the Higgs field and thus end the universe with a quantum vacuum explosion.
Yeah.
CERN clarified that Stephen wanted for being a creep Hawking speculation had nothing to do with the Large Hadron Collider's actual operations, and that measured Higgs properties suggest that it is stable, or at least a long-lived metastable state, likely to last at least 10 to the 100th power years. So if the universe ends because of the Higgs field becoming unstable, it will happen long after we are just a memory of the universe.
Okay. If it can happen a little sooner, that would be tight. Things are not going great.
So. Well, here's another way that CERN could kill us all. Earthquakes, supposedly. Now, okay. There were earthquakes.
Now we're talking.
In Italy in 2016 that are rumored to have been caused by activity at the LHC. A string of unusual earthquakes rumbled along the Swiss-Italian border in the fall of 2016. A bunch of buildings collapsed. 200 people were killed.
Whoa.
It was a serious tragedy. But just a few days after this happened, an organization called BP Earthwatch published a YouTube video claiming that the quakes may have been caused by experiments at the Large Hadron Collider.
And this was British Petroleum's Earthwatch?
I don't know
why
they're
always looking for anyone else ruining the planet. They're like, whoa, why are you giving us shit for oil spills? That guy dropped a bunch of buildings on the ground.
I don't know why they called themselves BP Earthwatch. Maybe they started as a channel keeping an eye out for BP oil spills. But their video, according to the Daily Mail...
A British institution.
True. According to the Daily Mail, quote, in one test in late June, plasma was fired from the LRC to... Which that might be a typo in the article. They might mean the LHC.
It is the Daily Mail, yeah.
Plasma was fired from the LR or HC to a lab 250 miles away in Italy. The narrator of the video claims the area of the earthquake is in a direct line with the Italian laboratory. Now, keep in mind the narrator also says, quote, it looks like CERN is purposefully trying to create a Stargate, but the planet will suffer earthquakes in their failures. Sure, a Stargate would be one way from one planet to another in the blink of an eye. This kind of technology could allow humans to use it as a portal to gather new resources, meet other species and conquer them, or populate another planet.
And conquer them.
It also allows...
You know, if we're going to meet them, you got to conquer them. If there's anything Cortez taught us.
Well, it also... This is from the quote, allows aliens to come in from the other side to conquer us.
Okay. So, well, hopefully we can work out some sort of sport to play with them instead. Like, there's another way to show this kind of strength. Yeah.
To the Daily Mail's credit, they, of all places...
They took the article down.
No, they have not one, but two little boxed off and highlighted explainers detailing what CERN actually does.
Oh, wow.
And this includes an explanation of the neutrinos to Gran Sasso experiment that was said to have triggered the earthquake.
Yeah, that was interesting to me because you said that it was like they're shooting plasma, but in my mind, CERN is just like a giant circle, so I didn't know it can like fire plasma to an unrelated institution.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. That obviously wasn't happening directly in the loop, I don't think. It must have been going in a straight line somehow.
Their plasma catapult they have on the roof.
But the little explainer in the Daily Mail confirms that, yes, neutrinos are blasted through 455 miles of the Earth's crust to a lab in Gran Sasso, Italy, where experiments are used to detect the neutrinos and study if they've changed form during their journey. This phenomenon, called oscillation, only happens when neutrinos travel long distances through matter. Again, CERN clarified that nature routinely produces higher energies in cosmic ray collisions that happen in the atmosphere at every moment of the day, which admittedly sidesteps the question of what happens when those rays are shot through the Earth's crust, but I'll give them a pass because I think it's safe to say that whatever blasts through our atmosphere also probably blasts through the Earth. And we know that earthquakes aren't caused by anything from the sky. In fact, one might say they're caused by the Earth. So I think I'll go along with CERN here in the explanation that these particles are nothing to worry about. But
somebody shot me in the knee, I'm sure my leg would move. You know, Earth probably does the same shit.
There is a guy, I think we talked about him on some episode. I can't remember which one. If we haven't, maybe we'll talk about him and a new Fear Unlocked, but there was a guy who got like some plasma beam shot through his head by accident. Not
at
CERN.
Oh, we did talk about him.
But
fuck,
somewhere.
I forgot what that was. Why did we talk about him?
Changed his personality and like cooked his brain and stuff.
Yeah, I bet it would.
But he lived. He was like, he was more or less okay. Yeah, you don't want to stand too close. You don't want to get your head blasted by a direct beam of this shit, but it's probably not causing Italian earthquakes. All that said, the most popular CERN conspiracy theories revolve around the idea that these scientists in Geneva might be messing with doorways to other dimensions that could have dangerous consequences for our reality. According to an article on iflscience.com, quote, hours before the Large Hadron Collider was scheduled to be fired up again on July 5th, 2022, Twitter users like reptile_hybrid started posting things like, quote, in 8 hours, the gates of hell will be opened. The transdimensional reptilian beings are coming for you and your family. This is not a drill. When nothing happened right away, they followed up with, quote, a lot of people are discounting how serious the CERN Hadron Collider agenda truly is. It's not like beings emerge from a portal and instantly kill everyone. That's not how satanic rituals work. The ramifications will unfold in the coming months.
Okay. Don't give a timeline then.
One TikTok astrologer warned her followers, quote, on July 5th, we are quite literally going to be switching timelines when CERN turns on their machine thingy. It's opening a portal to go through. Also, the unknown is coming in. Keep your positive vibes up.
Okay, the first part of that I agree with. If there's anything that I would like get behind way before reptilian terracotta soldiers come out of the earth is, yeah, timeline shit, like starting a new timeline or closing an old timeline. Like, I can totally see that. Like, my science fiction brain can get behind that. Mm-hmm. But it seems weird to have to feel definitively like the timeline's about to change and then call it a thingy.
Yeah, they're turning on their machine thingy or whatever, and some stuff is maybe going to happen, but who knows? Keep smiling.
Keep smiling.
This is sort of very loosely probably the closest place that the actual science does somewhat line up with the ideas on the internet. Unlike black holes that could swallow the Earth or particle beams that can cause earthquakes, the notion of portals or doorways is something that CERN scientists have theoretically discussed. A former CERN director, an Italian who maybe tried to destroy his hometown with an earthquake, named
disgraced former
CERN director Sergio Bertolucci, was once quoted saying something along the lines of, the LHC could open a doorway to an extra dimension, and out of this door might come something, or we might send something through it. Which is a tough quote for a CERN director to have following him around the internet.
Yeah, well, the next quote he was, and if you like that, my new bottled rigatoni will take you to another dimension of flavor. So come on down to...
Manja
Mintero
yummy, yummy.
Meats and manja this new pasta.
The only thing blasting through this dimension is 10 dimensions of taste.
Yeah.
Sergio
Hard-boiled
was
particles.
Yeah. Of course, Sergio was speaking hypothetically about testing higher dimensional physics models. Like, if we did produce tiny black holes, it could hint that extra dimensions exist in the universe. And here he was also, I think, to scientists, you know, when he's saying we could open a doorway and send something through, he's talking about these sorts of experiments where we're like, you know, teleporting a particle from one place to another.
Exactly.
And, you know, he's not talking about the Demogorgon. He's not talking about tentacles. He's not talking about the upside down. But he said it, and conspiracy people latched onto his words hard.
Well, do you think, this is a question, speaking of latching onto words and having just used the term physics models.
Yes.
Made my brain go, you know, and this is going to be for two separate episodes we'll be doing in the future. But like AI reads everything. It scrubs the internet of everything. And so that includes this guy's quote. And so when you have these AI hallucination people who become like obsessed with AI and they were like, AI told me in 8 hours it's going to open a gate to hell. And the only way to stop it is to send a million burritos to CERN or whatever. Yeah. And then you see that person on like Good Morning America. And it was like, the new medications aren't helping either. Right. Open AI ruined my life. Yeah, I guess it would also have been fed, their large language models would have also been fed like quotes from this guy and Reptile Boy 69's tweets and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope that those models would reference those words in context, but you can't trust them that they will. So I think all this stuff is in there, and the more traction any of these theories get, the more likely it probably is to turn up as an answer in a large language model. So to people who have no understanding of what's going on at the Large Hadron Collider, a doorway is not a metaphor for new data. They are thinking it is a literal stargate, as mentioned in the earthquake article. You know, they imagine scientists chucking interns into a
purple...
Oh,
it's like Stranger Things. You have like, it's like literally like a wall breaks and beyond it is...
Something else, yeah.
Yeah, a portal, like the video game portal.
Now, as Ed mentioned much earlier when I mentioned the year 2012, that is when these ideas really started to take hold, because 2012 was already a big deal in New Age and conspiracy circles for being the end of the Mayan long count calendar, which in 2012 completed a 5,126-year cycle on December 21st. The question of why it ended there and what it means is probably a story for another episode, but what's important for today is that the ending of that calendar meant that a lot of people thought the world was also going to end along with the calendar, especially the kind of person who might be primed to believe that CERN is summoning demons.
Yeah, people who have the FAQ section of CERN's website in their bookmarks.
Yeah. So in 2012, when that also happened to be the year that scientists at CERN discovered the Higgs boson theory, the idea of this great timeline shift was born. A lot of people will tell you that while the world didn't physically end in 2012, it became a different place emotionally and spiritually, which I guess is kind of true for me in 2012.
In many ways, yeah, yeah.
As people began to search for evidence that perhaps we had shifted timelines or jumped into a different dimension, the term Mandela effect exploded into the public consciousness and things got weird.
Was that also around 2012?
So Mandela effect, there's references back as far as like 2009-ish, but it really...
So when they really... first finished at CERN, the machine...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
When they arrested a terrorist and the time-traveling bird dropped a bagel on the fucking rings.
Okay, well, that's... I don't like the way this timeline's working out. That's sounding like, what Mandela effect, it did cause it.
If you are somehow listening to this podcast and you have never heard of the Mandela effect, we will probably do a whole episode on this at some point. Many other people have. It is interesting in a lot of ways, both fictional and non-fictional. But if you're unfamiliar, the Mandela effect refers to a phenomenon where a large number of people misremember the same thing in the same way. It is named after Nelson Mandela because a lot of people distinctly remember him dying in prison in the 1980s, which didn't happen. He actually died in 2013 after having been released years prior and served as president of South Africa. Other famous examples you may have seen include the spelling of Bernstein Bears. It's spelled S-T-A-I-N at the end, not S-T-E-I-N. The Monopoly board game. Some people think the old man has a monocle. He does not. Ed, do you have any particular favorite Mandela effects?
I feel like every time, the exception of Mandela himself, I feel like every time they're like, people think this. I was like, it's me. I thought he had a monocle. I thought it was Bernstein Bears. Like, it was all sorts of things. I definitely knew that Nelson Mandela was president of South Africa. So I was like, yeah, that's not one for me. But yeah, I'm almost always caught flat-footed when they tell me these ones. No, Shazam.
Shazam and Kazam, the genie movies, one starring Shaq called Kazam, that exists, and one starring Sinbad called Shazam that doesn't exist.
Correct.
That one is the first Mandela effect I ever heard of, and that one got me because I remember this very specifically. I was on a train and I was reading a physical magazine. It might have been Wired.
Well, it's not Highlights. You weren't in a dentist's office.
No. But there was an article that starts talking about and I had just been leafing through it, and this article caught my eye because it was talking about Shazam, this Sinbad genie movie that I like thought I kind of half remembered. And then in the article, it gets to the point where it's like, this movie never existed. And I was like, what? I could have sworn that it did. But the funny thing about Shazam is that anyone who thinks it existed, no one can really tell you what it was about.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah,
you know, other than Sinbad was in it. I think some of these effects are very age, not generational, but I bet you if you were to do a survey, people who misremember Mandela dying in prison are a little bit older than us.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, however Mandela effects actually happen in sort of like the public consciousness.
We weren't really consciously around for his imprisonment and stuff. We know Nelson Mandela at our age group as being president. You know what I mean? So we wouldn't have misremembered something we wouldn't have remembered to begin with.
So I guess before we go too deep down this, it's worth asking, if none of these things that we think were one way were that way, why do so many thousands, if not millions, of people remember it differently? The theory goes that at some point, perhaps in 2012 or perhaps in 2009, we or some of us shifted from one universe into another, just like, you know, Marvel multiverse kind of stuff.
Where things are basically the same, but there's little things off.
Right. So a portion of the population has this residual memory of how things were in the old reality. So if you've got Universe A and Universe B, maybe it was Bernstein Bears and the Monopoly Man did have a monocle in Universe A, but now we turned on the Hadron Collider and it kicked us to Universe B, where those things never happened, but our memories didn't update. Many Mandela Effect true believers point at that timeline. The Hadron Collider tried to get it started in 2008. They had all those accidents. By 2009, 2010, the term Mandela Effect was coined, and a wave of these false memories started getting a lot of attention. Throughout the years, this kind of talk has continued. When they turned CERN back on for what's called Run 3 in 2022, there's a whole host of posts all over the internet. r/conspiracy, one guy posted, "Let the Mandela effects begin." CERN was successful with the Large Hadron Collider. Let's start archiving possible changes in our new reality.
I love this.
Another user chimed in with, "Look for 10 times more Mandela effects, because back in 2012, they did a record voltage level that caused these Mandela effects. Whatever portal they're opening, they shouldn't."
No, they should. I'm for the guy, especially now that we live in this fucked up world where, like, you can bet on everything, where, like, everything is like a Kashi bet or like political bets. You know what I mean? Like, I can't wait to see what the over under on fucking Babar still existing after the next time they turn it on. Ooh, this is exciting. I'm not afraid of this at all. I'm fucking into it.
According to an article in Vice Magazine, the portal theory is particularly popular on TikTok, where a supposed whistleblower account called CERN Opening Parallel Dimen.
Well, there's a character count, I guess, issue with that.
Yeah. CERN Opening Parallel Dimen has repeatedly gone viral, claiming to millions of people, for example, that, quote, the particle collider is changing weather around the planet, or CERN is opening parallel dimensions that causes changes in the climate. Dozens of other accounts with millions upon millions of views have posted conspiracy theories about how the Large Hadron Collider was set to open wormholes, portals, mirror dimensions, alternate dimensions, so on and so forth.
Well, this is a question for you, because maybe I didn't understand it fully. In its 22-year history or whatever, it's only been turned on 3 times.
I believe so.
So it's not like they built it and then every time they need to run an experiment, they just rip it on.
Well, I think they schedule their experiments, and when it turned on does not mean fired. I think it's been fired a lot more times than...
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, it would be a bad investment for all that money to almost never use it.
Well, I don't... When they specify run one, run two, run three, I don't know... I don't think it's like they're flipping it on for a few minutes and turning it back off. I think they just have these scheduled blocks of time where it is on and then it's shut back down for maintenance. Like you were saying earlier, this is, I think, a very complicated machine and lots of things break on it all the time. So I don't think that they don't leave it on all the time, because it also probably eats enormous amounts of energy.
Can't be more than AI fucking data centers.
I know, right? I would love to see that. What costs more money? Me generating a picture of Ed taking a poop in the White House, or discovering the Higgs boson particle, which dried up more lakes?
It might be the same. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
But I guess for being like a kind of a dummy, I feel like I was kind of maybe right about my dissipation of heat idea for why it's bigger.
Maybe.
Based on everything you're saying about how cool they have to keep it.
I'll say this. I do think, I hinted at this earlier, but I do think a portal to hell has opened. And in a way, it's CERN's fault. I think it's the internet and social media that is actually allowing each of us to live in a reality of our choosing.
That's
and
true.
Then mm-hmm. tell everybody else that actually the fact that you thought Pikachu had a black spot on the tip of his tail means that we are living in a parallel universe where everything else is exactly the same, except these little pieces of pop culture detritus that we misremember. Which brings me to one of the things that I think is maybe the most interesting thing about Mandela effects, which we were touched on just a few minutes ago. Most Mandela effects, as far as I can tell, have to do with one or two letter misspellings, aesthetic details in commercial products, like the cornucopia in the Fruit of the Loom logo that was never there, which is another one, I will admit, I swear I learned what a cornucopia was because
from
of the Fruit of
the Loom
logo.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that every catalog Mandela effect, again, as far as I know, with the exception of Mandela dying or not dying in prison, has to do with like little shit like that. Like, is Jif peanut butter Jif or Jiffy? Does Pikachu have a black spot on his tail? It's never like, wow, all these people remember a 13th apostle named Wallace.
Yeah. or 9/11 like, not happening.
Yeah. It's this very small stuff. And I do think it's really interesting that it is almost always some kind of a commercial or pop culture thing. You know what I mean? It's always some bit of advertising or a cartoon or a logo.
Yeah.
That seems to be being misremembered. And
did the
and
Snorks
not,
ever exist?
I don't know. Wait, were the Snorks like Smurfs? What are Snorks?
Yeah, the Snorks are the Smurfs underwater. They lived underwater. They were basically like cousins of the Smurfs.
But
that's real.
I don't remember the Snorks, so maybe I'm from Universe
man.
C.
Do you know what we should do?
Snorkless universe.
If I ran a company, mm-hmm. I would be like, I would see if my company had a Mandela effect that was like popular.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I ran Coca-Cola and everybody remembered there being a thing called like fucking Coke Smile, and it was, I don't know, clear Coke or something, or fuck mm-hmm. it. Let's say I ran Pepsi and Crystal Pepsi people thought wasn't real. Okay. I would then literally release like a limited edition Mandela effect clear Pepsi where I would like release the like thing you thought was real as like a limited edition product, or like, oh, you can get a Pokemon card that's the Mandela Effect Pikachu. and it's like worth more money.
Well,
it would go ahead.
If you run a billion-dollar international conglomerate, Ed is looking for work. So
since 2022, thanks, fucking Boson. You Higgs bozos.
I think this is a great idea. I'm actually curious why. I guess it's ultimately too niche for them to bother. Maybe also maybe they don't want to deal with potentially contributing to someone's like schizophrenia.
I think Coca-Cola changed. They created Fanta to keep selling Coke to the Nazis. I don't think it's below them.
True. That's true. So, I mean, all that to say that I don't think all Mandela effect theorists are operating in bad faith, or that it isn't even fun to speculate about. But I am concerned that there is an endless fire hose of this shit aimed directly into most people's eyes all day, every day. And the cumulative effect that has on our psyches might not be as dramatic as ravenous demons pouring out of a fiery portal in the wall, but still may lead to the end of all life on Earth. So,
and I think it's also extra dangerous right now because A, it's a fire hose. B, it's algorithmically placed into the hands of the people probably most susceptible to it based on the previous things they'd watched or clicked on. And then C, I think a lot of people are having a hard time in the last year or two. Like, people are just fucking, people are broke. Things are tough all over the world. Things are weird. And you get this little device in your pocket that gives you all these excuses for it. It was like, oh, am I unlucky, or was it the boson Higgs machine? Or, oh, I guess it's just these fucking scientists at CERN hit a button. It's not me. I'm not the one who needs to change. I'm not the one who needs to, you know, change things in my life to make things better, because there's nothing I could have done anyway. I'm in a new timeline. Look at Berenstain Bears.
I mean, there are people, if you go on Reddit, and I'll save this mostly for a Mandela
next
episode
yeah.
or whatever, but there are people who talk about shifting timelines and like consciously, I wanted to shift last night, so I went to bed thinking about the world I wanted to wake up in, and then I woke up in that world, and now here I am, and my old body's in the old dimension. And it's like, I think a lot of this is kind of like, I guess the kids would call it cope. It's just cope. It's like, things suck, and it would be really cool if you could just convince yourself that, like, yeah, I woke up in a new dimension today and things are marginally better around the edges. A lot of things are still terrible, but hey, you know, that peanut butter you like is back in style. So,
well, this kind of takes me back. Do you remember, and this is like maybe a good way out, because I think we're closing up on some of these discussions here, but do you remember when the first Avatar came out and there was like news reports about people who were like, take me back to Pandora?
Yeah.
Like, people who were losing their minds by like seeing this world they wanted to live in desperately.
I think I've told the story on the show before, but right around the time Avatar came out, I was in Boston working on a documentary video, like a promotional doc for Emerson College. And we had a Boston police officer was just, you know, doing street duty to like, we had to have, trucks parked somewhere or whatever. So we had like a cop that had to be there, right? And somehow he was talking to somebody about Avatar, and he was like so moved by Pandora, and he was like, yeah, you know, I saw that Pandora, and I just I'm never gonna get to go there.
I don't know why he's like a Simpsons voice, but
he just had like this. What could he had this like thick cop,
he had an
you know,
accent. He had
tough
he had
guy
cop accent, okay,
cop accent, you know, and but he was just like morose about the fact that I ain't never gonna get to Pandora.
nope, sir, you're like, not.
I was like, wow, that was when I was like, oh, maybe this movie is gonna be a phenomenon. This random cop is like, you guys make movies. You ever see that Pandora? Like.
I mean, the best shot he and most of us are going to get to going to Pandora would be with the, like, Whalen Corporation tearing down whatever that fucking place is anyway, looking for unobtainium to put in our new phone. So,
yeah, well, hey, when you run out of hopium, then you switch to copium, and then you better hope that we've got some unobtainium.
Unobtainium is it a real thing? Because it's
no,
it's not, no. I just mean like because it's also the the movie The Core, it's yeah. also what they have to make the like machine they go to the center of the Earth is made out of unobtainium.
Oh, I mean, I wonder if it's like some kind of a like one of those just like the way that the Wilhelm scream gets reused in movies.
Yeah.
If
so I think Oakley also, just... Oakley sunglasses, I think also had like a marketing thing about like made of unobtainium.
Oh, maybe, yeah, maybe it's just sort of like a sci-fi term that gets thrown around.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or maybe James Cameron loves the fucking Core.
Yeah, he probably does. I mean, listen, that's the same company from Aliens, though, isn't it? Like, so.
Well, Weyland-Yutani is the company from Aliens, but I don't think it's the company.
In Avatar?
In Avatar, I don't think. Because he doesn't, I don't think he has the rights to that.
Be cool if there was a time where everyone had the rights to Aliens, right? It was like coming out from every studio. It was that and Terminator, I think, were both getting thrown around.
Those got bounced around a lot. Yeah,
so
I
anyway, or they've always been at the same studio and they turn this fucking machine on. Next thing you know, it's at Fox and they hit the machine button again and you remember it as a Universal movie.
Brother, Blumhouse and Universal put out a Halloween movie. What was that about?
Oh, yeah, because they turned the machine on. They turned on the Higgs boson.
The Higgs bozos running the Higgs boson are meddling in our reality.
I mean, look who bought fucking Paramount or trying to buy Warner Brothers now. Like, these are people who would probably know Higgs boson people.
I married a beautiful woman and have a child. Those are two things I never thought was going to happen. So
fuck, man. How come you got all the good shit in the 2022 fucking button press?
True. It's true. But Ed, there's good stuff coming your way. I know there is. There's good stuff coming both our ways. But what's coming our way right now is the end of the episode, the fear tier. Ed, where do you place CERN portals on your fear tier?
I'm fucking one. A two.
A one. Okay.
I look at it as something. It seems like work that needs to get done. They're doing it someplace I'm not at. And it sounds like every time they hit that button is an opportunity for me to get a glow up. And if I don't, you know, what are you going to do? Luck of the draw. So
I hope if anyone listening to this episode knows any scientists that work for CERN, please play it for them and tell them to email us. No joke. We've had some people reach out about, there's actually in our email, I got to go through, like somebody reached out about putting us in contact with some paleontologists. There's like actual scientists that people have suggested would like to come on this show. And I part of me almost feels like we should do like a special series or something where we just talk to people who are smarter than us.
Where we just apologize to smart people?
Yeah, because I can't have an actual physicist in an episode like this. But if anybody is interested in like having a fun conversation about this stuff, we would be more than happy to do something where we talk about whatever crazy shit is on your mind.
Ed won't even have to be there.
Yeah.
If that helps sell it to them.
But for me, for now, I would put CERN portals, I guess, a little bit higher than you, Ed. I allow for a little bit more of a concern that maybe it's going to knock something loose and really fuck us. But I think that's partially because I have, as we discussed in our sudden death episode, a pretty severe fear of the great oops, the sudden death that comes out of nowhere. And no one could create an oops on a bigger scale, potentially, than the scientists at CERN. So God bless you all. I hope you get enough sleep and don't fuck anything up.
Well, hopefully we get an episode out soon enough where we can talk about Looking Glass and its connection to CERN and the object hurtling towards Earth right now, because those are all things that me, a person who's never online for the most part, was served in my feed recently of like real lunacy. So I would actually like to talk more about that. So hopefully we'll talk to you guys soon.
We'll jump on the bandwagon. So that's it for this week. I hope you're having a great Thanksgiving. We are both very thankful that the Earth is still here, albeit whichever timeline we are in. And whichever timeline you're in, make sure to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/scaredallthetime. See what we've got going on over there. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on our Facebook group.
Go to the Discord. We do sometimes weekly, sometimes bi-weekly hangouts. I do, at least on Discord.
Yeah. So we'll see you out there. Until then, I'm Chris Kalari.
And I'm hopefully getting filled up with stuffing.
This show is Scared All the Time, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Scared All the Time is co-produced by Chris Colari and Ed Vicola.
Written by Chris Colari.
Edited by Ed Vicola.
Additional support and keeper of sanity is Tess Feifel.
Our theme song is the track Scared by Perpetual Stew.
And Mr. Disclaimer is...
And just a reminder, you can now support the podcast on Patreon and get all kinds of cool shit in return. Depending on the tier you choose, we'll be offering everything from ad-free episodes, producer credits, exclusive access, and exclusive merch.
So go sign up for our Patreon at scaredallthetimepodcast.com.
Don't worry, all scaredy cats welcome.
No part of the show can be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Production.
Night.
We are in this together.
Together.
Together.